Falcon Cast Podcast, the ultimate podcast for the ultimate fan. Now, here's AtlantaFalcons.com's own Jay Adams and Daniel Cox.
Falcons fans, welcome in. It's another edition of the Falcon Cast Podcast here on AtlantaFalcons.com. Thank you so much for joining us. Jay Adams, Daniel Cox, here to my left. And we are just done with rookie minicamp. We just finished that up.
Sure.
All the new rookies in Flowery Branch, getting some work together, and lot going on. Before we get too far into this, you know we're like 2 months from training camp?
I know.
Think about that.
Yeah.
2 months.
I was thinking about it this morning, thinking, you know, okay, here comes January or June, and, you know, there's so much going on in June for the Falcons as far as events and, you know, OTA is beginning, as well as the true mini camp, full team mini camp. And then July.
Yeah.
We'll get some, you know, about those, that 3 weeks off, and then it's the end of July.
Yeah.
Here we go.
I mean, that hit me yesterday. Like, I was really thinking about it, and I'm like, wow. Yeah. Okay, so.
They're really.
2 months, just about, we're going to be.
It's like Coach Smith, you know, he said it last season, I think. He called, you know, the off season is just now the non-playing season.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's right, because there really isn't an off season, and, you know, any of the digital media staff can attest to that. We've had certainly a lot going on with, stadium groundbreaking and MLS announcements and the draft and all kinds of different things in the off season. I'm ready for the season to get here, though.
Oh yeah,
you know, for a lot of reasons, but I like the routine of it.
Sure,
you know, we know kind of what we're doing on a daily basis, mm-hmm. and you know, it certainly helps. The off season is just a big jumble of randomness, really.
True, this
so,
is true.
You know.
Yeah, you know, like you said, the events, it's just, there's one day we were downtown for the groundbreaking, and next weekend we'll be somewhere else.
Right.
But yeah, and the greatest thing about training camp is it feels like you're getting back into school, and like even though we're here from sun up to sundown every day for like at least the first 2 weeks, it's just nice to get back into that routine of you know, practices.
And that's why it was fun to watch rookie minicamp last weekend and, you know, actually be back out on the field, and it's new football and it's new guys. And, you know, there are a lot of different storylines, certainly that we're going to be covering from here on. But it was just nice to be out on the field again and watching practice. So, you weren't there.
I know, and it's so strange, because once we talked and we agreed that, you know, I wasn't going to be there, it was like, oh my God, this is the first time, like, I've missed almost anything in years.
Yeah, and you probably feel like you don't know a whole lot.
I mean, I was just like everybody else. I was reading Jay's blog and checking your Twitter.
Yeah. But when you miss something like that, you really feel like you've missed a huge chunk of stuff. So, but we're going to talk a little bit about rookie minicamp. And in fact, I think you're just going to throw out a bunch of questions.
Yeah.
To me,
well, you know, I need you to,
cause I was in there. Like, sure. I was there.
Of course you were.
I was watching with a keen eye.
Oh yeah.
On, every day of rookie minicamp.
Right.
Looking at drills, looking at, footwork and hips and fluidity and, I really wasn't.
Okay.
But I was there. I was watching, and I mostly socialized during the whole thing.
Of course.
But I kept a sharp eye on what was happening. So we're going to talk a little bit about rookie minicamp, and you're going to be kind of like Oprah right now.
Okay.
You're just going to ask some questions.
All right, Jay. Can we get lower these lights a little bit? Well, here you go. Everyone's concerned about the pass rush. Did you see an answer with the rookies, with the pass rush?
You know, before you get into something like that, I think it's important to note that okay, it's rookie minicamp.
Right.
They're not wearing pads. They're going up against other rookies. I understand that, because that's been the caveat that I've seen a lot of fans throw out there. All right, when it comes to just assessing kind of how rookie minicamp went. Everybody looks great at rookie minicamp, which I believe is not true. That's a myth. Not everybody looks great at rookie minicamp. But it's hard to truly gauge that potential when they're not wearing pads and when they're going up against other rookies. Mm-hmm. I understand that. We'll throw that little disclaimer out there before I even say anything. That said, I think there are a couple of options that were addressed, guys that were brought in during the draft who could be options for that. And one I'm particularly excited about is Tyler Starr.
Okay.
And he was the second to last pick in the draft. I mean, two picks away from just being an undrafted free agent and hitting the free agent market. And the Falcons swooped him up at number 255, one before Mr. Irrelevant. So he's Mr. Slightly Less Irrelevant.
Slightly Less Irrelevant.
But really, I mean, he was impressive in rookie minicamp. And, you know, I wrote about him a little bit.
Sure.
But, it was across the board. If you looked on Saturday's coverage, me, D-Led, Vaughn McClure, anybody who was here really remarked at just what Tyler Starr showed during the 3 days.
And, well, let me ask you this. Having said everything that you said about, you know, what a rookie minicamp practice session looks like, how did he jump off, you know, off the field at you?
Yeah, motor.
Okay.
Big time. And look, I know it's a buzzword. I know.
Sure.
And I know the Twitter scouts out there sometimes get a little annoyed at that word, but he's got a high motor, and this guy runs at there is no half speed. I actually asked him. I said, Tyler, you don't have half speed, do you? And being a guy from South Dakota, and being from a small town, and being from a small school, he says, look, there's nothing given to me. Mm-hmm. I was drafted, but you know, there's no guarantee of me making this team, and that doesn't allow me to go half speed on anything.
Sure.
And so I think that was he's got a lot of desire to be good. And you know, it's funny because we normally don't spend a whole lot of time talking about seventh rounders, right?
Yeah.
Because you know, especially when you draft four linebackers in the seventh round, I mean, in the third day of the draft, you know, there's the seventh rounders. It's a uphill battle for them.
It's a 50-50 kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's hard making the team.
And so for us to be glowing about a guy who was again two picks away from being an undrafted free agent, you know, it's interesting, and I think there's something there. I think, you know, maybe some teams overlooked him, but this
he was his conference's defensive player of the year.
Yeah. And you can see that. Like, when you watch him practice, you can see that. And you're going to hear these comparisons. You're going to. It's going to be, as my friend Matt Moore behind the camera says, a brutal fact of reality. Okay?
Okay.
BFR. He's going to be compared to Croy Bierman.
Of course.
Yeah. And you're going to hear that throughout, as long as he's with the Falcons.
He's a little taller than Corey Bierman, though.
Yes.
I think so.
He's definitely taller, but the comparisons are there as far as how he practices,
how
he approaches the game. Again, high motor guy, which was what you heard about Croy when he was coming out of Montana. So, you know, this is a guy who I believe can really at least show flashes of being able to help that. And again, there's no guarantee that this guy makes a team, and we're judging this off of 3 days.
Yeah.
However, I view him as kind of an option there. He proved to during his college career to be a pass rusher.
Absolutely.
Did really good coming off the left side at South Dakota. Did really good coming off the left side here during rookie minicamp. And, you know, whether his hand's in the dirt or whether he's standing up and dropping back into coverage, I mean, he was lights out everywhere.
Okay.
And the thing that I wrote about, it kind of stood out to me, was just his 4-point stance, that throwback, you know.
Yeah.
And it certainly helps with his explosion off the ball.
Sure.
And he is really quick off the ball. Here's the other thing to note about him is that he spent much of his time during the 3 days going up against Jake Matthews.
Oh, yeah.
And you can say what you want to about rookies not facing, or rookies facing other rookies, et cetera, but Jake Matthews is kind of the exception to that.
Well, yeah.
And I thought Starr more than held his own, and that's not a knock against Jake because Jake had an outstanding rookie minicamp. Starr was able to, you know, get some moves on him and get past him a couple of times, and that's going to happen in practice all the time. But, you know, that was one of the things that stood out to me.
Okay.
I've spent a lot of time talking about him, but I think it's also important to note Prince Shembo.
Yeah.
Is another guy who I think can contribute in, sure. in the pass rush scenario. This is a guy who can play. Mike Smith said, this is a guy, yeah, he can play outside linebacker, he can play defensive end, but he can also play inside. So he's really a guy that the Falcons view as somebody who can do it all and contribute in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
Coming off the edge, he's about as solid as you're going to see.
Sure.
And okay. So I like both of those two guys as options when it comes to the pass rush. And I know that you've written a little bit about Rashid Hageman
right.
In the pass rush game. And, man, it took two offensive linemen every time to keep him out of the backfield.
Okay.
That's the two guys.
Those are the kind of things, yeah. yeah. That's the kind of stuff you look for,
yeah.
I think, in a you know, a non-padded practice.
Right.
You know, who jumps, who stands out a little bit, whether it's because of their energy or, you know, their quickness. And again, there's no tackling, so it's hard to say, well, that would have been a tackle for loss or that's a sack. But you can kind of get a sense just from a timing and how quickly he gets to a spot. That could have been a sack or that could have been a big play. Yes. Those are the kind of things you look for. So,
I mean, he was just in the backfield constantly.
Yeah.
So I think there are options there.
Sure.
You know, while you didn't get your Clowney or your Khalil Mack or your Dee Ford, I think you still have some options there to mm-hmm. play with. And let's not forget there's some guys on the roster who are going to be able to contribute there as well. But I think that the guys you brought in, those three in particular,
mm-hmm.
could end up helping you out a lot in that phase of the game.
Okay. I had a thought over the weekend about Hageman. Just from a – we've heard, you know, we're switching him to defensive end and there's still, you know, how much 3-4 versus 4-3 is going to be played is unclear. And certainly, you know, a defensive end and a 3-4 versus a 4-3 plays different roles. I almost see him as a guy that they feel like can be a situational, like, utility man on the defensive line that they is almost like a pass rush specialist that they can put in different spots. Defensive tackle, they can do some things with him at end and out of a 3-4, probably out of a 4-3 as well, because just his athleticism and like you said, you know, just requiring two blockers. I just feel like he's instead of, you know, that situational pass rush guy that they can put an outside linebacker that can just go rush the passer, maybe they have one in him that they can put all over the D line. And maybe it's a little bit different kind of thinking about than what we're used to hearing, but I feel like, you know, obviously he was drafted for a reason in the second round, but I believe he's going to be a guy that's going to be able to do a couple of different things from a pass rush perspective in a couple of different spots.
Yeah, you know, the thing with his versatility and his history and just playing defensive tackle is, you know, you're moving him out to defensive end, but the way you can use him in the multiple Yeah. defense that the Falcons are planning to run. You know, when they were in 3-4 formations, you know, you saw him playing 5-tech mm-hmm. defensive end.
Okay.
When they're in 4-3 base, you saw him kick inside.
Okay.
And so he was more of a 1-tech there. So that's the thing is like you can use him in a lot of different ways, but either way, wherever you put him, I mean, it's going to be hard to keep him out of the backfield.
Yeah.
That's just what I noticed. I've noticed that obviously on film. Mm-hmm. But just in rookie minicamp, I mean, there were times when you just can't do anything with this guy.
Yeah.
You know, and it's got to be frustrating for an offensive lineman. I think he's going to create a lot of bad days for some guys.
Good. Yeah, that's what you want to hear.
Yeah.
So speaking of him, let's talk about his defensive line coach, his position coach.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of new coaches, most notably offensive line coach Mike Tyson and Brian Cox on the D-line. You know, and saying there's a culture, asking you if there's a culture change is kind of a stretch, but did you – Was it noticeable that there were new coaches in yeah. those positions?
Yeah, and I think I saw Vaughn McClure mention it in one of his articles from the weekend. Is the language has changed a little bit
yeah.
at those positions, and there's a lot of fire there.
Sure. Okay.
Mike Tice is a big fan of the sled. We were actually talking about that on the way down here,
yeah.
but the 5-man sled is out there, and okay. he uses it every day.
Cool.
And he's on, you know, there's a little platform on there for a coach to stand.
That's old school right there.
It's old school. And he's chirping away. And, you know.
That's awesome. That's what you like to hear.
But Brian Cox, I mean, you saw, I think it was Saturday, or no, it was Friday, excuse me. No, it was Saturday, sorry. I'm getting my days mixed up. Saturday after practice, he had, you know, they'll do this one big team breakdown, and then they'll break down into position groups and talk about, okay, here's what we need to work on, blah, blah, blah. And so the defensive line did their little breakdown, and then three of them, Hageman among them, were ordered to do up-downs. And we saw this at the Senior Bowl, is Brian Cox making these guys do up-downs. And I don't know what that was for. I don't know, you know, if it was – if he's got it set up for different infractions or whatever.
Right.
You know, you earn a certain number of up-downs, but these guys are doing up-downs. NFL players. And so the thing I've noticed differently is that there's a lot more discipline. There's a lot more, I think – you know, we talk about different coaching styles and everything, there's certainly, you know, your more softer-spoken coaches who get it done from a cerebral standpoint, and then there's your yelling, motivating coaches, and I think these two fit into more of that category. But there just seems to be a little bit more physicality. One of the things that stood out among the rookies was just mentioning about how they don't really know how to go through a walkthrough, because
that's funny, because that's something we've seen a number of times.
Yeah,
with rookies coming in.
Yeah, they're like going full speed out there when they're trying to do skeleton sessions.
Yeah,
and so the Jake Matthews said he had his nose busted one day. There's been split lips and things like that. But I think a lot of that is a product of. Sure. Kind of what's being drilled into them by these particular coaches. There's a lot of toughness there.
Good.
A lot. And, you know, you could see where things were kind of getting chippy at times in the trenches, and I think it's just a product of the coaching that's happening at those spots.
Okay. Two last questions.
Oh, we got two more questions.
Well, these are a little off base, but...
Okay.
Okay, having said that, what's... You're going to hate me for asking you this.
You're probably right.
About to get in so much trouble. Over under on, you know, fisticuffs in a training camp.
Oh,
you think?
None. I mean, there were no melees that needed to be broken up.
Okay.
There were no scraps. No. Okay. I mean, look, there were a couple of times where. Sure. I think Hageman in particular had to be not restrained or anything, but it was.
Sure.
Coach Smith kind of got in the middle between him and somebody else. They were far apart, though, but I think just to prevent anything from happening.
Sure.
But there was nothing as far as that goes. I think it was way more of a productive mini camp.
Sure.
But, you know, with some of the guys that have been brought in and kind of this new toughness policy, I guess we'll call it, it wouldn't surprise me in veteran mini camp or OTAs or training camp to have a couple of the, you know, when you get into the monotony of training camp and every day is the same.
A fight, you know, I think you can usually count on like one like verbal disagreement at least between the two of us.
I mean, that's training camp. That's training camp. But from their aspect, you know, it's the monotony. It's going through the same stuff and being in the heat and all that. And it creates some ornery men.
Yep.
And it just. Happens. These fireworks happen from time to time. I would bet on a couple of those in training camp, just knowing some of the guys that have been brought in. Again, the new philosophy.
Sure.
And the way that they're approaching practice, it wouldn't surprise me.
All right. That could be interesting. Okay. Final thing. If you were a head coach, or even a position coach, what type of coach would you be? You said that, you know, there's usually more cerebral coaches, maybe not soft-spoken, but they use their words less. Versus in coaches like Tice and Cox.
Well, I mean, what kind of manager do you think I am? I'm like the disappointed dad.
Oh, he turns it back at me.
Yeah. I'm like the disappointed dad, right? like I'm nice, and until you wrong me,
sure.
And then I'm not gonna like yell at you, but I'm gonna let you know I'm disappointed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And because I feel disappointment hurts way more than being yelled at. You can get over being yelled at. Disappointment is something that's going to linger with you for a little while.
Yeah. Right? That feels... Right, Daniel?
Right, Daniel? How's that work for you?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, certainly, I don't want to let you down. You know, and you're right. When those things do happen, you're like, oh, man, that feels worse than just, you know... getting swatted or whatever, yeah. You know?
I had my high school head coach though was great because, he was a yeller to motivate. And, it's Coach Jim Haw in Victor, New York. And I love this guy. I always will look up to him as one of my mentors, but he would get so fired up that his voice would reach octaves that, have not been heard from, like, he would be, you'd see him, like, yelling and screaming, but there'd be nothing coming out because only dogs could hear it. That's how high he would get.
Yeah.
And it was just, a lot of fun to play for him, but he had that different kind of style where it was very much yelling and you wanted to play for him. Now, when I played in college, excuse me, I'm like pushing things all over the place. When I played in college in D3, I had a coach who was more laid back and not much of a motivator, and it didn't work for me.
Okay.
You know, that I apparently need to be yelled at in order to motivate me.
Okay.
So, it was, for me, it didn't work. For other guys, they may respond better to being yelled at, or they may respond better to having a little bit more of a softer spoken kind of guy, but I think you get a nice mix now with Tice and Cox, and then on the other side of that is Mike Smith, who can yell and be a motivator.
And
like
Coach
that.
Nolan, you know.
And Coach Nolan is much more laid back. And so there are proven results on both sides of the equation here. So and I think you get a nice mix with some of these guys.
Yeah. And I think that's probably what they're always going for is that level of balance.
Sure. Know,
from a voice perspective. So.
Yeah. Well, good interview.
Yeah.
It was very nice.
Cool, man.
That was very nice.
Appreciate you letting me
do that. Caught you up a little bit.
Yeah.
And, caught everybody else up. So we've got OTAs that are set to kick off next week.
Right.
The guys are still working, but the official start of off-season training activities starts next week. We will be out there for some coverage, of that. We'll get to cover one OTA per week all the way up to veteran minicamp, which will be at the end of, or no, middle of June,
something like that.
So, we wanted to talk just briefly about, maybe one or two positions to keep an eye on as look, battles are underway now.
Yeah.
You know, as far as who's going to be playing what positions, if some of these rookies can maybe step in and, help out right away. So that stuff is really going to kick off for OTAs. What are you looking for?
Looking at running back, looking at the entire running game from a, Just an overall perspective. I've written about it a number of times. I've asked questions about it. I just the running game has to improve. The offense. I don't believe the offense can truly be what it's capable of with a running game that's you know on the level that it was last year. It needs to be more successful than that. It needs to be something they can lean on. I'm curious to see. See it all come together. Excuse me. And I'm curious about the position itself. You know, Jason Snelling, longtime Falcon, retired in the offseason. Steven Jackson's returning, should be healthy. And I don't think there's any question that if there's a lead back, it's obviously Steven Jackson. But I'm real curious about those other three guys, Jaquiz Rogers. We know we can expect out of him. And then, you know, the possible, you know, increase in usage of Anton Smith, who just amazed us last year with his like 20 some touches.
Yeah.
He was fun to watch and Devontae Freeman just continues to grow on me just from a character and attitude approach perspective, just the way he approaches the game, but also like what he can do in the backfield. I'm super intrigued by him. And I think if they can get just between the four of them, even just 100 yards a game, in a variety of different ways, and different running styles as well. I think the offense will be so much better off. So I'm real curious to see, some of what they're going to do in the run game and see some of what those guys can do on the field as we begin to move through the offseason. So.
And, you know, that's a crowded position.
Absolutely.
That running back spot because you also have to think about Josh Vaughn.
This is true.
On
who was on the roster last season.
Yep.
Absolutely.
and we haven't seen a lot of what he can do. But one thing I'll tell you, though, is that just in going through rookie minicamp and seeing some of these guys, especially the undrafted guys, there's a dark horse candidate to replace Jason Snelling, and that is Jerome Smith out of Syracuse.
Yep.
I didn't get a chance to write about him much, but he got a lot of looks during rookie minicamp,
okay.
And he can do everything that Snelling can do. If you want to line him up at fullback, you can line him up at fullback.
Okay.
If you want to line him up in the backfield, throw a little shovel pass to him and get a couple of yards out of that, you can do that with him. And I think that's when you talk about what do you lose out of Jason Snelling, you lose that ability,
yeah.
that Snelling shovel pass
up
the middle,
yeah.
you know?
I've seen it a number of times.
Yep. And so for me, I agree with you there. With the running back position, because it is crowded.
Yeah.
It is really crowded there. And to see who stays and who goes at the end of camp is going to be really interesting.
Absolutely.
For me, I'm going to say there's two spots that I'm going to really keep an eye on. Number one is that safety spot, opposite William Moore, because I think that battle is going to be intriguing. You've got Dwight Lowry coming in from Jacksonville. He's obviously hungry for an opportunity, but then Desmond Southward, the more I do research on this kid, the more I like him. As sure a tackler, I think, as you're going to find.
Sure.
And when you talk about that position and you know, I think people get hung up on the stats that he put up as far as ball skills go.
Mm-hmm.
I think he only had two interceptions in his college career, but look at his tackle numbers.
Sure.
I mean, his tackle numbers are outstanding. And when you talk about what you're trying to improve from years past is having that true safety valve, right?
That
guy who's going to stop an explosive play before it ends up being a backbreaker. And I
Absolutely.
Think this is a guy who can do that.
Sure.
So I'm really intrigued with that spot. And I think the other, just speaking of crowded positions, the linebacker position, both inside and outside, is crowded. And, you know, you really have to pay attention and see who's going to be playing what. Where certain guys who are coming in from last year or previous years, how they fit into just this shift that's occurring in the defense. So, because, you know, some of these guys were maybe drafted under a different scheme.
Yeah.
So how do they fit in?
Sure.
So those are the two spots that I'm really going to be intrigued by. And you talk about crowded positions again. Defensive line, I think everywhere on defense is crowded. Well, that's what happens when you draft, you know, seven defensive players, and only two offensive players, and so you get a little bit of that crowding effect. But I think it's only going to serve to heighten the level of competition that we see.
Absolutely,
competition breeds success, and it breeds more competition. And I think that is something that we're going to be following quite closely during minicamp and training camp, as well as OTAs. So for me, those particular spots, so we'll just say all defense. I mean, everything there is just so crowded for me that I'm thinking something's got to give. There's got to be some dominoes that fall there.
Sure.
And so it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out.
As far as Desmond Southward goes, I felt like I was a little, not surprised, but taken aback by just the response from our podcast last week where we were discussing some of our bold statements.
Yeah.
Everyone, I got a number of tweets that said, I can't believe you didn't talk about Southward. So there's a little love for him.
Well,
but
yeah, and I think, you know, look, we try to fit this into a half hour you and I could sit here and ramble on for for a very long time. So, you know, there's only so much that we can truly mention in that amount of time. But I think, look, I was like everybody and I had to do a little bit more research on this guy. And, I've done that and just reading about him and seeing things about him, watching him on tape. I think there are some really nice qualities to this kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote about it on the site this week just about, you know, he had this weird thing that happened at the combine where, you know, he gets an x-ray done and there's like somebody says he's got a fractured vertebrae and he gets flagged by one team. Well, if you get flagged by one team, you get flagged by all teams and you have to you cannot work out, right? So he had to go to a specialist and he got cleared and then he ran his pro day and went lights out at his pro day and actually would have been the number one safety in the 40-yard dash and also in the vertical. So, and he would have been number three in broad jump as well. So, there's underwear Olympics wise, he would have been very impressive. I think he would have been on more people's radar had he been able to compete at the combine and put up those numbers at the combine. But the more I just look at this guy, I'm like, look, he can get two interceptions over a 3 or 4 year career, and I'd be okay with it as long as he puts up the tackle numbers that he did at Wisconsin. So for me, he's looking like more and more a solid pick at that spot, and I'll be interested to see if he can break through the starting lineup and be that guy opposite William Moore, because I think those two could complement each other really well.
Absolutely.
So there's your Desmond Southwood, Southwood love.
There's the Southwood mention.
There it is. All right. Well, we are out of time, so we'll come back next week with some OTAs action.
Sounds good.
All right.
Let's do that.
Well, thanks for joining us here on the FalconCast podcast. Be sure to join us next week as we bring you more right here from Flowery Branch, Georgia.